talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now, from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Nick Caserio, most powerful general manager in the NFL. I'm going to tell you why I believe that. Nick Caserio. First off, he's made himself the face of the franchise, right? Like, the fact that he talks just as much as the head coach, like, he wants to be the voice. He wants to be the message that is out there. He does the weekly hit with Mark Vandermeer and John Harris on HoustonTexans.com, where it's basically a coach's show for the general manager, Nick Caserio. On top of that, who do you think picked the staff last year? Do you think it was David Culley or do you think it was Nick Caserio?
I think the majority of it was Nick Caserio.
So if Nick Caserio is the one that's choosing the staff, you can make the case that Nick Caserio, and I mean, I wouldn't even say make the case, I think it's pretty obvious. He's the one that's setting the tone on what he wants the philosophy to be. Tim Kelly, like, you can make the case, well, he just brought him in because he wanted Deshaun Watson back. But he was also a guy that learned from Bill O'Brien, who was a New England type of guy who learned the way of the, you know, calling plays in the NFL from that New England model, which is a model that Nick Caserio wants to replicate and calls it a great general manager, or calls that organization a great franchise to model. He said that today whenever he spoke over on the Highway to Hell. And then you also look at it, like, he hired the defensive coordinator, Lovie Smith. So it's like, okay, I want this philosophy on defense. I want this philosophy on offense. Pep Hamilton's going to be our quarterback coach. He's the dude that's hiring the coaches in this organization. So he has more power than the head coach, which this power, if you look across the NFL, no other general manager has the power of Nick Caserio.
Oh, I disagree. I think that his disciple and that his Darth Vader and Obi-Wan in Belichick has...
He's not the GM, though.
But he is.
Right, but he's also the head coach.
That's how powerful he is. He doesn't care if he has the actual title or not. No one's doing anything in New England without the consent and approval of one Bill Belichick. I think that the fact that Caserio walked into an ideal situation because of what Bill O'Brien got away with, that he gets away with more than most. I'll give you that. He may get away with more than any other general manager in the league, but in terms of, I think respect goes with power. And I think that you gain respect and power in a lot of ways with winning and success, and in a lot of ways through, you know, relationships and tenure. I think you check all those boxes with a guy like Belichick. You check all those boxes with a Mike Tomlin, because of the fact that when they walk into a room, you respect them immediately for what they've done, what they've won. I don't think he has any of those cachets. I think he walks in going, look, I got this unbelievable deal because they gave me 6 years, they gave me the keys to the franchise, and they said, fix it. And so if they want me to truly fix it, then they need to get out of my way, and I need to go just like the last guy and do whatever I feel is necessary to get the job done. So I don't disagree with you that he's powerful. I don't think he's the most powerful.
My pushback on that, though, is the two guys that you mentioned, and not disagreeing with what you said, but Bill Belichick's a head coach. Mike Tomlin's a head coach. I'm speaking specifically about GMs.
Well, isn't in some ways Caserio almost the head coach after last year?
That's the point that I'm trying to make, is that he is the most powerful GM in the NFL. If you're looking at just that title, and yes, Belichick has more power. Well, I would say it's equivalent power. Like, does Bill Belichick even have more power in New England than Nick Caserio currently has right now at the Houston Texans? Maybe that he's calling plays. Maybe that he's setting up the practices. But Nick Caserio's taking snaps from under center at practices. He's very involved in that. He talked about it this year about how he scouts opponents that are coming up as well.
But I could push back with you on the flip side of that the same way and go, they may have the head coach title, and whether they have the general manager title or not, I also think that they're going to go into the general managers and the player development rooms and the draft rooms, and they're going to not only be heard, they're going to lead the discussion. And so therefore it's kind of like six of one versus half a dozen of another. Caserio's the GM that meddles a lot in the coaching. You know, Tomlin and Belichick are the coaches that not only meddle a lot but control the majority, if not all, of the player and general manager decisions.
Right. And maybe that blurry line is kind of the point that I'm making here. The fact that Nick Caserio has just finished 1 year, and like we had some fun on what the passing grade was, but like I think both of us had him just barely passing, right? After year one. Yet you're comparing him to like a Bill Belichick, and where they're pretty close in terms of overall power. Does Belichick have slightly more because he's the head coach as well? Yeah, probably. But you look across guys who are only general managers in the league, Nick Caserio is on the headset. Nick Caserio has total control of the 53, where the head coach isn't meddling in the 53 at all.
We've heard that from previous general managers and others that said it's just unheard of to do what he did in the yeah, coach's box with the headset.
Exactly. That's one example right. of it. The fact that there's also not a head coach at all, like, instructing, like, hey, I want this player, I want that player. And, like, a head coach... most of the time, Bill Belichick's an example is not a good example of this. Bill O'Brien obviously had control of the roster whenever he was all said and done, but they usually have input. They usually have some say. Like Wade Phillips, whenever he was the defensive coordinator of the Houston Texans, he suggested that they draft J.J. Watt. So the coaches have some input, whether it's the head coach or the coordinators. There's no input being given to Nick Caserio. He has total control and total authority of the 53-man roster.
Maybe not this last season, right? And also because of the limited amount of draft picks that they had. But I think that, especially if Lovie Smith is back with his experience and with how much he's respected as a defensive guy, that I think that he would have input, especially if they were looking at defensive players and it was known or he was in the room. I don't know that he would be the end-all, be-all decision maker. I think that obviously still is going to be because that's what Caserio's paid to do. But I would push back in the fact that if you have a respected coordinator or coach, I think Pep Hamilton would have a lot to say in terms of, especially if you're looking at quarterbacks, especially because if you don't feel like Davis Mills is unequivocally your franchise quarterback and you're looking at other quarterbacks, you'd be an idiot not to get the input of Pep Hamilton.
You'd be stupid if you're not asking Lovie Smith what you thought of right. this cornerback before you draft him. Now, I don't know if you want Lovie Smith like looking at every single player in the NFL draft and giving you a report. I think you're more giving him names like, hey, this is a guy we could be targeting with our first pick in the second round. What do you think of this guy? Like, I don't think you're putting the job responsibility of Lovie Smith, hey, give me your big board for the entire NFL draft. It's more, here are a couple of names. I'm curious your opinion.
And I threw out Tomlin and Belichick just quickly off the cuff because I didn't look at every roster in sure. the NFL. I'm trying to think of other, like, really well, powerfully established personalities, whether it be the GM and or the coach.
It doesn't exist from a GM perspective.
Obviously, Jerry Jones has the utmost power because he's the owner and the general manager, and so he manipulates the coaching staff and the media and so many different aspects of the everyday business of the Cowboys.
But even Jerry Jones isn't instructing David Culley to let the Patriots score.
He's not doing that, but he is instructing the coaches in a lot of ways on probably who to play and other things that he's sitting in coaches' meetings, for God's sake. So don't put it by him as the owner to be able to say that, look, I still have the biggest, you know, artillery in the room, and if I come in and want to say something, I'm saying something.
Yeah, I mean, those guys are powerful, and the names that you mentioned are definitely powerful figures in the NFL. Jerry Jones is a powerful figure in the authority he has with the Dallas Cowboys. Bill Belichick has the, you know, the rule of the roost in New England. He's doing everything.
To further strengthen your point, Matt Rhule's a guy that has the power of the two of the, like, with the two positions in Carolina.
Yeah, but Dave Tepper could go in there and fire him right now.
That's what I'm saying. I'm strengthening your point. The fact that he might have the titles, he doesn't have close to having the cachet and the clout that we have with Nick Caserio here, because you're right. The owner would never miss an opportunity to push back. Like, the owner would never pull a Cal and go, wait, you want to trade McCaffrey for an aging running back and a second round pick? Do that right away. There's right. no way Tepper wouldn't step in and go, you're not screwing my franchise to save your job.
Unprecedented power from Nick Caserio that he's on the headset. Other GMs yep. that we've had on, and we've had on several, saying they've never seen that from a general manager before in NFL history. And I want to be clear, I'm not saying that to say, like, it's a bad thing. Could Nick Caserio be on the headset?
I think it is a bad thing.
That's a different discussion, because to me it's a bad thing with optics and perception. Like, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing that Nick Caserio is in the headset. Like, if he's this great, like, sabermetric, analytical guy, and, like, you know, is it really something that's causing a problem on the headset on game days?
But he's
I
the
doubt
boss.
It.
And if you hire a guy to do a job, but yeah, you're hovering over his shoulder or on the headset on every play, and you're verbalizing your thoughts to some degree, it's totally different than if you're the analytics guy that's going down in distance and what we should do if we get to third down and 7 as opposed to third down and 2. And I think it all changes when you have that title of general manager and you have that clout of being the boss. I don't think he has any business being on the headset, and I think that is a massive, massive show of distrust in the coach that he had, and probably in part the reason why he got rid of him too, because he knew he wasn't capable of doing what he was supposed to do, so then he had to go in and babysit during the game. but it scares off so many people because they see that going, that's unheard of.
That's where I'm at. Like on game day, like he was on the headset with Belichick. We all know this. He was on the headset with the Texans and people were like, oh, who cares that he was on the headset? Where I care is the perception and also just the optics of the fact that he was on the headset. I want to talk about this on the other side too, because earlier today when he was on the highway of hell, he was doubling down on the headset. He got defensive about it, had this long answer about the fact of him being the headset is being overblown and is not a big deal, which to me it is a big deal for reasons that he even brought up. Also, does it bother you how much power he has? Because, like, okay, does he have more power than Belichick? Like, it's a fun conversation. But he's being mentioned in the same elk as Belichick, as Jerry Jones. Like, these powerful figures in the NFL, and Caserio might have just as much power as those two guys. Does it bother you how much power that Nick Caserio has?
Well, you know,
and what's your thoughts on that whenever we get back? Also, your thoughts, Houston. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. The power that Caserio has, does it bother you? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Warrior sound! Real. Let's go! Fun. Sports. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Does it bother you how much power Nick Caserio has? Unprecedented amount of access on the headset, according to other general managers around the NFL.
Yep.
Coaches really aren't meddling with the 53-man roster. He's picking the staff, setting the philosophy, and he's also the face of the franchise. He does 30 minutes with the radio, the Texans radio.
He's calling it what I told what
on
I call
their
it,
website.
I love it. The highway to hell.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
He also there doubled down on the headset thing. And he's like, well, people that are criticizing that don't know my history. They don't know that I was doing that with Bill. Yeah, we do. We do know that you were doing that with Bill Belichick. And look, I'm not even saying you're kind of arguing the other point a little bit, but I'm not even saying that you being on the headset for the 60 minutes of the game is a bad thing. Like, can it be an asset? Yes, if it's done properly, it can be an asset. Where it absolutely crushes you, though, is the optics and the perception of it. Like, the Texans right now are going to be looking for a new head coach. And in my opinion, they're going to have to settle for less. And this is part of the reason for that, that he's picking the staff. He's on the headset. He fired a head coach after a season. Jack Easterby is still around. Jack Easterby's still there. He also talked about Easterby today and said, look, Jack Easterby and everything that he's done and like his current role, that's all being overblown. I believe that that could be possible. I believe that that could be true. I believe that Jack Easterby could have basically been like this little bit of a demotion where you're not even looking at the 53-man roster. Let's entertain that for a second. But let's just say Doug Peterson's the top candidate to be the next head coach. Like, let's just assume that Doug Peterson's the best candidate on the market. He's the top name. He's who everybody wants. If you're Doug Peterson, even if Caserio being on the headset is a good thing on game day, even if Jack Easterby's no longer involved with the personnel and the 53-man roster, you're going to that interview. And Nick Caserio also said that he was asked about Caserio being on the headset by somebody that he interviewed already for this job. If you're Peterson and you're going into that interview, I don't care that the Easterby problem is fixed. I don't care that Caserio being on the headset, he thinks is a good thing. Maybe it is. But from Doug Peterson's perspective, looking at your organization, the GM's on the headset talking to me, the head coach who's the hot name on the market, Jack Easterby still in this organization, you might have fixed it. I don't care. I'm going somewhere else.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. If you're this is where it really makes a difference to me, because one, as we were talking about it in the break, one, he's only doing what he knows can be done in Houston that could not be done anywhere else, and that is based on the overwhelming control that Bill O'Brien was able to accumulate over the years and just, you know, swipe jobs off of everybody else's table so that he could become the most powerful man in the franchise. Caserio's like, why not me? Why not now? I'll do the same exact thing. But that's internally. Externally, no matter what we know and don't know, what's going on internally, externally, from agents to players to potential candidates for any job, both on the business side and on the football side, and as a player, you don't want to go there unless it's the only opportunity you have. Because if I go and I weigh out all my options, like we talk about with the whiteboard, with a line of the positives and the negatives, the way we do with the way so many different basketball and football operations do, how can anything outweigh the fact that there's too much meddling? That you know what? It's such a big deal. Like from a Mike McCarthy standpoint, when we were talking about Jerry Jones. But Jerry Jones is the general manager too. But the fact is that when you're a player in that locker room, at the end of the day, you don't think Mike McCarthy's running things. You don't think Mike McCarthy has power and control. You think Jerry Jones does. And so that's a bigger problem. So when you're looking at it and going, yeah, as long as I get my cash, if that's the biggest, best offer I have out there, short term, I might be able to sign up for that. But other than that, if I have other options, why the hell am I going there? In the analogy you gave with Peterson, I understand the Texans are going to go into that interview with questions they want answers to. If I'm Doug Peterson, I probably have as many or more questions than you have for me that I have for you, because you know what you know, right? And so from a Peterson perspective, just like we know from a Caserio perspective, I've been on the headsets before. I come from New England. This is all I know, so this is how I want to run things. If I'm Peterson, I'm coming in going, every place I've been in Green Bay. I've won a Super Bowl with the Eagles. I'm going to tell you right now, no way in hell is my general manager on the headset and talking. Some of them might say, yeah, you can listen in, but I don't want to hear you, and I certainly don't need you to do the job that you hired me to do. And so if you're going to continue to do that and you think that's something you have to continue to do, then you have to look for another candidate.
That's where the negative comes into play, where a lot of people are just glossing over. Like, oh, well, this is a new way of doing things. Maybe the general manager, Nick Caserio, is an analytical guy and he can help out with the analytics. Like, that can be true. That can be true, and I even believe it to be true. But then you have an outside party that's going to look at that and be like, whoa, 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 that's not for me. Let's get back to the other question I asked you going to break. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. The power that he has, the face of the franchise, total control. He's picking the staff, setting the philosophy. He's on the headset talking to coaches on game day. People are trying to like diminish that and say it's not a big deal, when there are other GMs that have done it before in the NFL are saying this has never been happened before. Nick Caserio himself said earlier today that people he has talked to about the coaching job have asked him about the headset on game day. Does it bother you how much power Nick Caserio has going into year two as the GM?
Yeah, you know why? Because he's not earned his stripes. He hasn't earned the pelts on the wall to say that I've done this for so many years and I've won this many championships and I've done all these things to get all these players and these coaches and to establish these stabs to say that this works and this is why I'm not changing it. Bill Belichick could get away with that, right? All you were was Bill's coffee guy that, you know, got to sit and observe and partake, but really didn't have anywhere near the control that suddenly you have gifted to you. So the fact that, you know what, that's what that doesn't fly and sit well with me. It didn't sit well because also, in terms of the precedent of this organization, it didn't fly and sit well with the way it ended with Bill O'Brien or the way it went along the way with the more power that he accrued and the more control he took. Those are the kind of things that as a fan and as the media and a media member, you point a finger to and go, didn't work out so well, and I wouldn't do that again. So now we're going down that road again, and he doesn't have even the accomplishments of Bill O'Brien as the head coach of the Houston Texans or the general manager in Rick Smith or the success in the heyday of the Houston Texans. So the fact that you're telling me this is the way you know how to do it, you're telling me this is the best way, I don't see any of the tangible results in your past because you weren't in full control there. And now that you have full control, I've experienced a guy that had that same kind of full control, and he crapped the bed and left us with a freaking canyon to fill.
Best case scenario for the Houston, look, they're going to replicate Patriots South. Caserio was talking about how great the Patriots organization is, best organization. They're going to replicate that going forward. They're going to try their best to do that. Best case scenario, you try to turn your head coach GM relationship into what Tennessee is doing. John Robinson and Mike Vrabel is the optimistic, let's do that, let's follow that. That's the way the New England model can work. But if you look at that dynamic between those two and you look at the relationship between a Robinson and a Vrabel, like, they're both probably alphas, but Mike Vrabel is not the puppeteer to John Robinson. And like, if you look at this past offseason, David Culley very much was the puppet for Nick Caserio. Like, and that's what's going to be so curious about this hire. Like, does he go with somebody who he can control, much like he did with David Culley? And if you go back to the press conference, a lot of the things that he said was he's going to look for a lot of the qualities of a David Culley. Or do you go with like a Brian Flores, who is a Vrabel type dude where he's tough, he's demanding, he's not going to just let you walk all over him? Like, I've not been pro Flores because I don't think Flores is all that great of a head coach. But you look at the dynamic between the GM and the head coach, you might need that from the head coach to push back with Caserio. And then Flores probably deserves and needs that pushback that he didn't have in Miami as well.
Okay, but here, I want you to keep going with that, okay? Because what I think you were on to, but just needed to take one more step through the door on, is the Robinson approach with Vrabel is exactly why we're going back all the way full circle to the Patriots way, and that's where they're going to end up.
No doubt.
Because those guys had a pre-existing relationship in New England. So there was already a dialogue. There was already a communication level. There was a knowledge of the other's personalities. So you know what buttons to push, what when to push back, when not to. But they know each other, right? And I think that's exactly why the only way that this situation can continue to exist. I don't know if it'll flourish, but it has to exist with someone that already has a pre-existing relationship with Nick Caserio. These other guys that are interviewing are just doing that. And whether they're scared off or at the end of the day he goes, yeah, I can't do this that I want to do with them because, one, they're not going to allow me to be on the headset. They don't want that. Or they don't want me chiming in if I am on the headset. And in terms of player decisions or other things, they want to be involved in that when I know that in my heart of hearts it's only done my way or the highway. So I think that's why we'll go with all these different appeasing moves and interviews. But at the end of the day, the Tennessee situation is exactly just another reason why he will end up going with the Patriots way candidate.
Albert Breer, who gave us that hint about a month ago that Nick Caserio knows the coach that he wants to be the head coach of this organization going forward. He knew who that head coach was even before he took the GM job. He knew who that candidate was even before he hired David Culley. The idea was he just wanted to do it in the future, wanted to do it in a couple of years, whether it was because he didn't feel the candidate was ready or he wanted to save him from a couple of bad seasons. Albert Breer thinks it's going to be either Josh McDaniels, Brian Flores, or Jerod Mayo, and the reason he thinks that is because of the headset. Because you have other guys around the NFL that aren't in the circle, they're going to look at that and be like, man, I'm out.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that's exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the fact that they really think they're smarter than everybody else, mm-hmm. right? So, and you always say this. You always think Caserio's a smart guy.
Sounds very smart.
But he thinks he's smarter. He's Daryl Morey syndrome. He thinks he's smarter than every guy in the room and doesn't do enough research on that to realize that there's enough people that have been there, done that, that can call him out on this and go, doesn't work that way, Chief.
See, to me, it's pride. To me, it's stubbornness. Like, this is my way. This way is working, and we're going to do it no
matter what. But that's
what
we live with Bill O'Brien. That's why we frown on it so easily and so quickly, because been there, done that, and don't want to do it again, and you're trying to lead us down that same road. Mm-hmm. That's why it just doesn't make sense. Now, that's why I'm saying it's not exactly – I'm not saying it's the right move to make with the Patriots' way as a head coach. I'm just saying it's the only way he's going to make that move.
713-780-ESPN. When we come back, Randy Mueller, former NFL general manager, joins us next. Critical offseason for the Houston Texans. How would Randy Mueller handle it? Skiller Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Telling you guys right now, Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com. Get there right now and check it out. The menu, unbelievable. The weekly specials, they're on there. So you can know exactly what I know, which is the best, the freshest, the made-from-scratch, tastiest Italian food in the city is done every single day by my man Chris Smith at Frankie's Italian Kitchen. I'm telling you because of the fact that I know I've experienced and tasted everything on the menu. And these specials, they're only there till they run out of ingredients, so he only puts them on the website. So when you check that out, you know what others don't. Hey, he's got this special this week. I got to get there. It's like a mom and pop, not a chain restaurant. We talk about all these different chains. Well, the chains, guess what? It's all like pre-prepared meals and stuff out of a freezer, unless you go to the original location. And even then, you're not exactly sure if it was the way they used to make it. When you go to Frankie's Italian Kitchen, you know every single time, from the pizza and the unbelievable variety and taste of wings to all the different Italian dishes, it's made from scratch. All the ingredients coming from the best places to give you the best taste. And the owner actually is the chef that makes the food. Why would you go anywhere else? Especially if you're in the Richmond, Katy, Sugarland area. They are close by. And it's a family atmosphere. It's just the straight family that you feel like when you're going to someone's house for the holidays. You go in, you don't have to get all dressed up. You know you're going to leave full, and so is your wallet, because the menu is delicious and the food is affordable, and you're going to get filled up with big portions. This is what I'm talking about and why I talk for them, because I'm telling you, it's the best Italian food in the city. They've got pasta and salad specials every day for lunch if you're looking for a quick hit before you get back to work. And let's just remember that this isn't foo-foo where you got to dress up and worry about which fork you're going to use when you're at the table. This is spread out with the family and relax, because you're going to be here a while and you're going to sample everything that everybody's got, because the servings are big and they are absolutely scrumptious. Check them out today, Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com. Tell them Joel Blank sent you by.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
It's Killer Bees on ESPN at 97.5 and ESPN at 92.5. Joining us now on the HR&P guest line, former NFL general manager Randy Mueller. Thanks for joining us, Randy. Appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on. We were talking about Nick Caserio, and he, looking at it from, like, is he the most powerful GM in the NFL on the headset, face of the franchise? He does interviews with the local, you know, TV, the radio guys each and every week. He picked the staff more so than David Culley. How much power do you look that Nick Caserio has, and is it warranted?
Well, I think it's a power that's similar around the league. I think he's chose to use it a little differently. Maybe that's his style. I know this. When I've been a GM, I've had a headset in the booth during games. I just couldn't talk and had no reason to. I was always in communication with our head coach and kind of helping each other pick the staff, but I would ask him to help me pick scouts and other things as well. So there was always a give and take, a certain amount that I think is good. I don't think any of us are smarter than all of us, so I think it's a culmination of a lot of people working. I don't know Nick, so I just know the style that others have kind of portrayed, and sometimes it can be a little authoritarian, but that's his dilemma, and he knows how it's worked in New England, so he's trying to create that culture there.
Randy, if you're a potential coaching candidate looking at this place, and I think that it also, you can extend it to a possible free agent or an agent that's dealing with one, if not both, and you look at the scenario that we just painted and all the control that Nick Caserio has, is it a positive or a negative? Because I got to believe that if you have other offers and other opportunities, especially if the most pressing issue is a head coach, and you think, well, I don't have to deal with that if I go there, as opposed to knowing that it's going to be a hard discussion at the very least if I go to Houston.
I don't disagree with that. I think when players have choices, when coaches have choices, that's going to make it tough because of the environment and really the way it's been described. Whether that's fair or not, I don't know. Like I said, none of us are in on the inside. So I do know that certain players, certain coaches have criteria and function better or best under certain terms, and maybe that is a tough spot for them. I don't know. I happened to work with Nick Saban in Miami for a few years, and although he was very authoritarian and demanding, he made me a lot better. So I kind of thrived under those circumstances. I think it takes a certain amount of, character to allow yourself to be pushed. And maybe if that's Nick's style, to push everybody, I think that's a good thing in the long run. But I understand it may not be for everybody.
Randy Mueller, our guest, joining us on the HR&P guest line, former general manager for the New Orleans Saints and the Miami Dolphins, most recently the director of pro personnel for the Houston Roughnecks. Randy, you mentioned that you had the headsets on game days. What were the coaches thinking of that? Did they ever tell you? And then also, what were some things that you would hear on the headset during game day that would be something you would think about later or just use it to, I guess, evaluate your other coaches?
I really wasn't doing it to evaluate, and actually I did it only at the request of Jim Haslett, who was our head coach. He just wanted me to know what was going on, that's all. That way we could discuss things after the game or the next day, and I could follow along a little better with their train of thought and what they were thinking, but I wasn't using it to evaluate any coaches per se or game plans or anything like that. I just had a little earpiece, and to be honest with you, a lot of times I didn't even have it on. But there were times in games I kind of wanted to know what we were thinking. And again, it just helped in our line of communication between the GM and the head coach. So I do think there's advantages to it. But my quest into that foray was all at the request of the head coach. I've been GMs other places and didn't have a headset. So I don't think I think it's just style. And I think some people, want more collaboration than others.
Randy, you touched on something that I absolutely wanted to get to with you in terms of the communication and why I believe that the next head coach of the Houston Texans is going to be someone that comes from the Patriots way. It's because of the communication. It's because of the relationship, and especially with how Nick is running things, the fact that it's so important to have a pre-existing relationship. That's why I think it's either going to be Flores or Mayo. There's an outside chance if Josh McDaniels gets in the mix that I could see it happening. But I can see them interviewing a ton of candidates other than the Patriots way people. But I think at the end of the day, because of what you just said, even with Jim Haslett, and the fact that you had an open dialogue with your head coaches, they talked to you about personnel, you talked to them about system and what they were running. I think at the end of the day, it has to be a Patriots guy, the way they're running things.
Well, I don't think it necessarily has to be, but I will say this, having been through it a couple times, it does help with the learning curve, and it shortens it, that's for sure, because you can hit the ground running with a partner who you know well, he knows kind of where you're headed, and the systems that they shared in New England are probably going to be the same systems they share there. So there's some advantages to it for sure. Is that the end all? No, I don't think you have to have a relationship, but I found that it allowed us to hit the ground running and really be on the same page from day one. I always felt like, you know, two heads are better than one, and I wanted a communication line where we could say anything to each other at any time, but yet it was always our decision at the end of the day. I had that explained to me one time, Bill Parcells, when I was a young guy in the business, and he said, I always have a guy in my building, and not necessarily a coach, might be the personnel guy, might be the GM, but he said, I always want somebody outside my circle to bounce things off of. And it worked well for Jim and I, that's for sure, in New Orleans.
Makes sense to have that. Randy Mueller, former GM in the NFL, joining us on the HR&P guest line. Looking at some of these early interviews that the Texans have had, or guys they've requested permission on as well, you look at the Brian Flores, which is the obvious name because he was with the Patriots with Caserio and then had 3 years with Miami. Vince Lombardi's grandson, Joe, Jonathan Gannon, a name that has come up. Hines Ward, another one. And a lot of people see those names and like, come on, are you kidding me? What should fans realize about some of these interview candidates that probably aren't realistic head coaching options?
I think at times people forget that it is a process-oriented system, and I think you'll see that more with Nick Caserio than even most places. He's going to have a process. He's going to be detailed. And a lot of the time, he's gathering information, right? He may not want to hire Hines Ward at the end of the day, but he's going to gather some information from him regarding team building or something along the way that helps. Same with Joe Lombardi. Joe Lombardi with the Saints two different times, two different occasions, and there's a lot of good things that come out of that Saints building and that Saints organization. So maybe he was quizzing him on that, and the difference is maybe when he goes to a place like the Chargers. So I think there's a lot of information to be gathered, and I think if you spread a wide net, you can do that. We see it around the league even this week with teams interviewing GMs for the same reason. They're trying to spread a wide net to gather as much information as they can. It may force them to alter their criteria a little bit, and they, in the end, make them get a little better fit with the person they hire.
Randy, put your GM hat, take the headset off, put your GM hat on, and look at this after year one of the Houston Texans. They maybe overachieved a little bit, but you know that they got to overhaul the roster. They don't know if they have a franchise quarterback, but they have someone they want to see more of in Davis Mills. As you go into the offseason, and you know you finally have a first full draft pick draft coming up, when you look at like Laremy Tunsil, when you look at some of the veterans that are still on this roster, are you of the mindset of, I've got to keep this guy as my left tackle because he's going to keep Davis Mills upright and I need to build around him? Or are you looking at it going, he's one of, not named Deshaun Watson, he's one of the one assets I still have that has probably more value outside my building than inside my building as I develop the rest of this young roster?
Well, my thinking has always been, and I don't think it would ever change, is I'm not really into getting rid of good players. So I don't really care about the value that they may bring on the market. I know this, it's hard to replace them. So I'm going to keep the good players. I may look to move some that I don't think are valued correctly in our system. Maybe they're overpaid. The biggest thing I think you'll see now is a change really in the criteria of what they're looking for. Whoever the coach is, and I don't think they can do anything roster-wise until that happens, but this is also the Patriot way. They identify a criteria, especially on defense, so that they all know exactly what they're looking for. They're going to only acquire assets or players that have skill sets that can work in their system. That's a misnomer around the league. A lot of times gathering players is totally different than building a team, and I think you'll see them probably in earnest this year, start to build their team. I think last year they were robbing Peter to pay Paul. They made a lot of you know, roster adjustments, but they really weren't, you know, theoretically designed to be there for a long time. So I think you'll see the start of a team building group now once the head coach gets hired.
Former NFL general manager Randy Mueller, our guest on the Killer Bees. Looking at this offseason, obviously it's very critical. Deshaun Watson, what happens there? New head coach. They also have the number three pick of the draft, and we've been kicking around the idea of trading back. Nick Caserio has been very vocal about trading down from number three, which is curious to me. It's one thing to have your options open, to be flexible, to be thinking about doing that, and even do it behind the scenes. Why do you think he's going so public about that?
I just think he wants the word to be spread, right? He wants everybody to know that the for sale sign is out, that he's willing and able if the price is right. I know this, you got to be a little careful in when you do trade back that you're trading out of players as well. Now, maybe he's already done his homework and doesn't feel like the value is there with the third pick, and he's going to do everything he can to maximize value by trading down. There's so many smoke screens, so many theoretical ideas why people do what they do, why they become public with certain statements. It's really early to start honing in on that process to know what he's going to do. I just think that the blanket theory right now is keep all your options open and, you know, see how it shapes out, but try to talk to and be involved in as many conversations as you can with regard to team building and moving your roster.
Randy, I really appreciate you taking a few minutes. Really appreciate the insight as well. Look forward to catching up again very soon.
Thanks, guys. I enjoyed it.
You got it. Randy Mueller, longtime NFL general manager, also director of pro personnel most recently with the Houston Roughnecks. Hopefully gets that job again with the Houston Roughnecks. Did a good job. They were undefeated in the XFL.
Or the Gamblers.
Could be the Gamblers as well.
Because USFL is coming around the corner before that we even see the Roughnecks.
Very good point. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. A few things that Randy Mueller said there that were fascinating. One of the things, too, was like, okay, the authoritative voice, is that something that resonates more than, you know, having that back and forth, which is something that's critical, especially with this hire? We discuss it next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, weekend's around the corner. You're looking for something to do that gets you out of that rut, that same old, and you want to have some fun, whether you're on a date, you want to go with your friends and your buddies, or you want to take the family somewhere where you can kill some serious time but have some serious fun. It's all Discovery Green. It's called Pixar Putt. And for the kids, it is spot on because, you know, Pixar has all the characters and all the movies that the kids love. Toy Story, The Incredibles, Monsters, Inc., Finding Nemo, all those and more. It's all tied into mini golf. And literally, it's 18 holes of fun, interactive play that are inspired by the stories, characters, and icons of those movies that the kids are absolutely going to enjoy, but adults enjoy just the same. If it's date night, what a great way to really get to know someone while you're on the course for an hour, hour and a half, playing putt-putt golf. So it's not anything that's, you know, majorly stressful or competitive, but it gives you a chance to have an icebreaker, unlike a movie where you're sitting there for 2 hours and you barely get to know the person. My family loves this place. You're going to love it, too. And it's only open till March 20th. So jump on it now while the weather is starting to warm up again, especially coming up before this weekend. Check it out right now. Go to PixarPutt.com for tickets and information. That's PixarPutt.com. That's the only way these tickets are available. But then you head on down to Discovery Green. You know, there's all this great food and restaurant opportunities right there near downtown and in the Discovery Green area. You can have a great time. You can be outside. You can socially distance. And then you can have the time of your life playing Pixar Putt-Putt Golf. Check it out today, PixarPutt.com, for tickets and information.
ESPN 97.5. Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. A little bit earlier, we were talking about what's a passing grade on Nick Caserio, and I mentioned that he was a D, and you're like, that's failing grade. And we kind of had a little back and forth. Listeners and texters are all kind of back and forth on it as well. There's a poll at ESPN 97.5. 42 minutes left to vote on this poll. Currently, 59.7% say that yes, D is a passing grade. The other 40.3% says that no, it's not a passing grade.
My man Patrick Creighton's listening to the show. Loyal listener. Unbelievable response. The people that say the D's that get degrees, are ones with 36 double Ds. He's inferring that women with well-put-together anatomies are the only ones that seem to capitalize on that.
Thanks for the explanation, Joe.
Well, you know, I mean, I know that it's not really your forte in terms of wanting to dabble into that or go down that road on the air. I'm just trying to explain to you and the listeners to understand that, like, it's from where I was brought in, and maybe it's a Midwest thing, Brendan. I don't know. But, like, I don't know how you've changed the scale in 10 increments of 10 with A's and B's, and then suddenly, what, just to save a majority of the population, you went from a C being a 5?
According to Texas, scale? According to Texas high schools, yeah.
I just have never heard that.
That was a pretty derogatory response by Patrick, by the way. I feel like
it is what it is. I mean,
Patrick, no.
We bring these things to the table when they're brought to us, and Pat texted me that response, and I thought it was apropos to bring it up as a guy that is from New York but has lived in Texas, and I think that what he's basically indicating is maybe in the East Coast that the D scale does not start with 75.
I just want to point out one thing. Mm-hmm. The momentum is on the favor of Joel and I.
They're rallying late. Because they're stuffing the ballots. They're fixing the election.
For a long time, this was at 80. 80%, yes, it's a passing grade. It's all the way down below 60 at this point. So by the end of this poll, in 40 minutes, I think Joel and I are going to win.
There's a late surge. Oh, you're on that side, too? You thought that D's a failing
D's
grade?
D's are absolutely
a
failing
grade. We're from the
grade.
Midwest. This is the scale that we were used to growing up. You obviously speak from experience in this neck of the woods with the scale. I think it's unheard of that the scale goes in increments of 10 and then suddenly gets cut in the middle and goes, no. Let's give these kids an opportunity to. C's only midway through that. You know what? 70 to 7, you're still all right. No, stop it.
Randy Mueller we had on just moments ago, former general manager for a couple of teams. I didn't realize he was the one that traded Ricky Williams.
I saw that on the Twitch. I wasn't good. Clarence brought that up as a Saints fan. I'm not bringing that up in the middle of a conversation with him.
It's interesting. A couple of things that he said. The one that really stood out to me from Randy Mueller, though, was that how important it is for the give or take. And, like, that's one of the things we talked about earlier. From the GM and the head coach, relationship needs to be critical. You can't have Caserio, who's basically controlling every single thing that David Culley does. Like, you need the pushback. And he even said that whenever he was working with Parcells and Saban, those were guys that actively seeked somebody else's opinion, even though that they had that authoritative figure and they had that authoritative voice. Right now, Caserio, all he has is that authority, right? Like, we don't see the back and forth. That might be why it needs to be somebody like a Brian Flores, where they both need each other. They're willing to bounce ideas off of each other, where Caserio is going to help Flores not fire four offensive coordinators, but then Flores is going to tell Caserio a few things that he needs to know, too.
He totally solidified my belief even further that it's going to be a Patriots way guy.
Oh, no
doubt. It's going to be an existing relationship with Nick Caserio guy. It's going to be a guy that all those factors that he's talking about are already built into the deal, and he doesn't have to have all these answers for all of these people from the outside coming in trying to go, explain that to me. How does that work? Why do you feel like that's a necessity? Why do you feel like if I take the job, you're still going to be doing that on my headset and you don't trust me? That's why you're hiring me. I think that it just solidified a lot of those things, and that's why it's just another reason why when you hear it come from someone that's been in that chair, that's done those kind of things in terms of running a football franchise, but having that open dialogue and communication with the head coach, it makes all the sense in the world that why they're not going to hire from outside the Patriots way. And so that's what Texans fans already were bracing themselves for, but this just solidifies it more that this is what you should expect.
Yeah, to me, you have to have that communication. You have the one guy, like, dictating everything, then that's usually what leads to failure. We saw that with Bill O'Brien. I think Caserio needs to learn from this and try to find somebody that's willing to be able to bounce the ideas and tell you no whenever they feel you're wrong.
I wanted to ask Randy so badly because I didn't realize he was in Miami with Saban. The story that I've heard from multiple sources that I want him to verify, especially since he said there's a guy in every organization that even Parcells said that he would go to outside of his circle for, like, quote-unquote real talk. The rumor that I've always heard is that especially, and I dealt with this to some degree with Jeff Van Gundy, but not to this level, but I heard in Miami, Saban had a guy, and, like, if he was walking down the hall and he walked through accounting and Betty in accounting decided to say hi, coach, and wave, that the next day a letter would be waiting on Betty's desk from his hitman that either was with him at the time or that Nick told about the situation. And the letter basically says, Coach Saban is far too busy to be distracted or bothered with interruptions like the one you gave yesterday. Please refrain from doing them in the future. I could totally see that happening with Nick Saban, but I'm always curious about how realistic that story was.
Hmm. I mean,
if we have him on again, maybe Brendan can set the table and see if he's willing to answer that.
Why does Brendan have to set the table? Just ask him.
Just I don't want to piss him off.
Put
he's
him
been
on
a
the
very
spot.
Good
don't
guest
think
for
about
all
it.
Of us at ESPN 97.5.
He has, but you have a better chance of getting the true fill and the true answer if you don't have time to think about it.
Could you see Caserio doing that?
No, I think Caserio's a gentleman. I really do.
Do you?
Yeah. I think Caserio's like a good dude.
You love this guy.
Do you think I love Nick Caserio?
Not as much as Brendan thinks you love him, but I think that you definitely are very fond of him because you're always complimenting his style at the podium. You're always calling him a very smart and intelligent man.
I say he's
talking
smart.
You love his answer. Yeah, you give him a lot more kudos and love than I thought.
We were talking about this in our pre-show production meeting, and I said, look, it's a D. And then Brendan and both of you guys were like, whoa, I thought you were going to give him a way
you
higher
say a
grade
D
than
or
that.
The D?
I said Uddy this time. I learned my lessons from earlier in the show. But, like, why do you guys think that I would have given Nick Caserio a higher grade than a D?
I said this to you in pre-show. I do – like, I fully believe that you try to be 100% objective. I don't know what it is that draws you to him. But when I listen to you talk to him, like, fond was a good word choice by Joel. Like, it just feels like you really like Nick Caserio. And I'm not even saying there's anything wrong
with
that.
Maybe that you're rooting for him. You want him. And there's nothing wrong with that.
It really, honestly, that's a good point. It may just be that you're rooting for him, and it feels like it's more than that. Because, you do criticize him.
Yeah.
It's not like you don't. I just, the way you talk about him, do you want to be him? There's something about him that you're attracted to, I think.
My whole thing is more simplistic in the fact that it gets back to our letter grades. I was surprised at your letter grade, but it's more our interpretation of what's pass, what's fail than anything else, because I think you've been extremely honest about his performance, but just as easily as you're able to be attracted to his ability to sound smart and present his opinions at the podium well, and he endears himself to you. I think you've also been quick to be critical when he's made.
I give him the D,
a slip up. Yeah, I
letter mean, grade there. By the way,
is that you sure?
Yeah, I said it.
Oh yeah, I know, and you meant it. But I think that it's different in the fact that you're still honest in criticizing his mistakes, but that the passing grade to us. Would be a C. You're on the fence at a C. It's right there in the middle. It's passing, but just barely. But it's not failing, and this is why the letter grades shed a little light on that.
I try to be objective and honest with everything. To me, Nick Caserio, whenever he does speak, and spoke at the press conference, spoke on the Highway to Hell a little bit earlier, and whenever you listen to him, he does sound like he knows what he's doing. Like, he sounds like a sharp guy. I think that's what that's the positive whenever I look at Nick Caserio. He's made some moves where I'm like, I'm unsure of this guy. Like, I want to believe in him. Like, and at times, I am believing in Nick Caserio. But then he'll trade, a fifth-round pick for Anthony Miller. I'm like, what is going on? Like, this isn't something I can support. That's a decision that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And then would cut Anthony Miller a couple of weeks later. So, like, every time that I really want to basically be behind Caserio. Like, he always does something where I'm like, man, I can't really fully buy in. Like, I'm tipping my feet in the water, the Caserio water. I'm like, okay, I want to like this guy, but then he'll do something. I'm like, that's not what I want my general manager to do. I still think that Nick Caserio at some point is going to get the Texans back into the playoffs. Like, I think he's going to be in the playoffs before he ever gets fired. Like, I think there's a way that this can work. There's a lot of red flags that I have, but yeah, I mean, I think Nick Caserio is all right.
Well, but all right is a C.
I'm still giving, I'm not closing the book. Like, it's still
but,
open.
And look, everything that you said is absolutely fine, Jeremy, but I think that it's kind of like the reason why I've said all along, I'm holding out my true grade for him and my true critique until I see some of his major moves. What does he do with Deshaun? Who's he going to hire this time? We can sit there and nitpick about the Culley hire or the sixth and seventh round picks and the trades that didn't work out and some of the things that he's done positively and negatively, some of the draft picks he did hit on. But those are all minor, even Culley. I know from an ownership perspective, it's not minor when you're talking about millions and millions of dollars. That's the first major slip up that I think takes you above the kind of minor move status. And that's why I said, and you and I both discussed, that the clock is really, truly ticking because you hired him. That was all on you. Yep. You're not taking that and inheriting it when you took the job from Bill O'Brien. So now it's going to be, what do you do with Watson? It's who do you hire next? It's how do you learn from what you made mistakes on in the past? You get a full draft now. What are you going to do with that? Who are you going to pick? How are they going to turn out? And what are you going to do with this roster in a year's time? How are you going to develop Davis Mills? And are you going to let him be the only guy or are you going to get another guy? So That's why the clock truly is ticking now, and there's one major slip-up as opposed to the minor moves. I want to see how he bounces back from all of that in last season, the way last season went.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we return, we'll go around the NFL. Some moves made around the league yesterday. Also, Super Wild Card Weekend is over. It'll make you miss the 12-team playoffs a little bit. We dive into it when we return. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.